beginning any diet.
If you love a bet, then we'll bet you love the jackpots and specials coming your way every week. So place a bet you'll never forget today on the Tab app, online at tab.com.au or at your local Tab. Tab, we love a bet.
They're off. Gates open, they're off and racing.
On your racing and sports leader, Sky Sports Radio, it's time for Tab Talk.
One of the legends of the sport creates a little bit of magic at the mountain.
There it is! Adam Scott, a life changer.
It's the first time he's finished a MotoGP at Phillip Island. Mark Marquez does it in style down under.
With the very latest in racing and sport from around the country, welcome to Tab Talk.
And at 10:05, good morning everyone. Sean Cosgrove at tab.com.au. Andrew Giorgio. Morning, Andrew. How are you?
Very well, thanks, Cozzy. How are you?
Friday 5th. We've got a busy day coming up today. We'll be having a chat with the golfer Cam Davis this morning. He's just turned pro at the Queensland Open, and he looks like he's got a pretty good future.
Well, that's right, Sean, and I'm pretty sure he's a bit of a trick shot specialist as well.
Ah.
Can hit the ball from both sides, left and right, which is a fair talent in itself, considering most golfers, such as myself, can barely get it right on one side.
Actually, it's funny, when you say the trick shot stuff, for the life of me, I can't remember who it was, but recently there was a charity somewhere for kids, and one of the biggest names said, not a problem, I'll donate some money. And what he did was went out on the practice green and said, okay, you got to pay and I'll do trick shots. And they donated money to the charity. Apparently he was driving off one leg and, one-legged drives, all this sort of stuff, just put on the best show you've ever seen in your life, all to raise money for kids, which was absolutely brilliant.
No, just freaks. And I suppose you see him in all different types of sports, don't you? But the people that can really sort of excel in that sort of thing, it's almost like a religion to them.
And the others you look at and think, you do it so easily. I'm so jealous. I could, I go out there, I'm a human earth moving machine. I create my own bunkers. Anyway, Matty Russell joining us now from Fox Sports. Morning, Matt, how are you?
Cozzy, Andrew, how are you going? I tell you what, lucky there's no rugby league actually being played at the moment because there's no room in the papers to put it.
I know, if in doubt, sue. That's the go at the moment, isn't it?
Isn't it a horrible situation, relationship between the commission and the clubs, as low as it's been? Look, to paint the picture very quickly and without much detail, there was an understanding between the clubs and the commission. The commission eventually would pay 130% of the salary cap to the clubs. Now, to break that down in simple figures, if the salary cap is $10 million, that means each club would get $13 million from the NRL as part of this new broadcast deal. It was a memorandum of understanding, if you like. But the other week, John Grant returned from England and told the club that was not on the table anymore. That was not how they'd be funded. The chairman stormed out. Relationships have deteriorated since then. And late yesterday, they called or put together a motion to have an extraordinary / emergency general meeting where they would gauge support for John Grant. And unless he can get that necessary support on December 20, he will be gone. But it's important to say that all the independent commissioners have today announced their unanimous support for their leader, John Grant. He will appear on the Gold Coast today at Titans media conferences and talk more about his determination to stand his ground and to dig in. And the club is saying, well, we're not going to do anything until you are gone. So it's a horrible situation. Mm. But I think at this stage, the only way I can see it being sorted out quickly and without pain is for John Grant to go. However, I think it is important that we have a strong independent commission. We don't want the drunks behind the bar. I'm not being derogatory there to the clubs, but they have no proof of being able to run their clubs profitably, so hence the league or the commission is hesitant to hand them cash hand over fist for fear of what might happen to it.
Matt, I know the easy solution, and probably the general public who do love the NRL, what they're thinking is, just get rid of John Grant and hopefully the matter can resolve itself. However, does the commission have a right to go back on that memorandum of understanding?
I think it's poor business. If you get that far down the track and you've told all your participants or your business partners, if you like, in inverted commas, that this is what we are going to do, start planning along those lines, and then without warning, you pull it, from my very limited knowledge, it does appear to be bad business. At the same time, I think we need a strong independent commission. Yes, it might be the easy result to say, John Grant, go, and maybe that is the way it will actually work out best, but we need to have a big asterisk over that move. We need the game to lead the game, not the club to lead the game, because they are driven by self-interest. Their number one concern is their profitability, their success, their team winning. They don't, and I understand it, they don't have the game's best interest at the forefront. That is where you need the strong, independent commission to do so. So it's complicated, isn't it? John Grant, has done the right thing? Probably not. Should he go? Maybe that's the only outcome. Do the clubs need to get their way? I would say no, because I'll come back to it. Chairman, prove to me that you have the ability to run your club profitably, and then maybe you have a stronger argument to say we need this cash. But when they're losing money, what sustainability is there in the game long term?
It's I wonder what the solution's going to be, because it's a bit like a stalemate, isn't it?
Yeah, look, the clubs say the solution is get rid of John Grant.
Yeah.
The commission says the solution is come back to the negotiating table and let's sort through it. Right now, we probably won't know more until December 20 when this meeting tests support for John Grant. Who knows? There might be other developments between now and then that forced John Grant's hand, i.e. there's talk this morning that the clubs might band together and sue the NRL. I don't know whether that's going to happen, because ultimately, the longer it drags on, you know who suffers? The game. And if the game suffers, that means the grassroots suffer. And if the grassroots suffer, then 5-10 years down the track, all of a sudden, it's not a very healthy game at all.
Suing only takes money out of their coffers.
It does. It does. And look, the clubs want to get on with building their business structure, making themselves profitable. And in Parramatta's case, working out what's going to happen with Semi Radradra.
Yeah.
Because Semi has a few issues on his hands at the moment. Firstly, and most importantly, I suppose, it's the reported family illness. His father is sick, so Sammy, we believe, is back in Fiji tending to family matters. Aside from that, he has a domestic violence issue to deal with back in Australia, and there are threats that an arrest warrant will be issued for Sammy in days unless he can prove that he is really in Fiji. And aside from all that, Toulon, the garbage tip for rugby players in Australia, is claiming to have signed Semi Radradra, saying he's probably not coming back to Australia at all. So just when Parramatta thought they'd cleared the mire, that they were headed for better times, Sammy says, think again, Para fans, I might not be back.
Matt, what is the situation with Semi? I mean, like, you do say that he has that... I think it's domestic violence charge hanging over his head, and he didn't turn up to court earlier this week. If he does return to Australia, does he have to go to court straight away, or will he be arrested as soon as he returns?
It's a bit complicated. We spoke to his manager last night. So the magistrate gave Sammy's legal team the time to come up with a better reason why he couldn't front court. Now, if the magistrate isn't convinced that their second attempt has done that, he'll issue the arrest warrant. As soon as Semi sets foot on Australian soil, there'll be federal police there waiting to bundle him off to a watch house before his court appearance. The manager says that, look, he hasn't signed with Toulon at all, despite the fact that the Toulon club is on the internet saying, we've signed him, we've got his signature. So somewhere there, communication is broken down. The manager says it's only an offer at this stage. So there's a bit of water to go under the bridge yet, isn't there? And the first thing, the priority, I suppose, should be for Sammy to prove to the magistrate that he is serious about answering these domestic violence charges, and he will do everything he can to go back and to meet his legal obligations. After that, we can start to worry about where he's going to play footy in 2017.
The other thing, Matt, with all the legal issues, without going into them, if some of them turn out to be a fair dinkum, he might have troubles getting into France.
That's the issue that has to be played out. He might have issues getting into Australia before he has issues getting out of Australia to play in France.
Yeah, so, might let him in.
Mourad Boujalal, the head of this Toulon club, he's a colourful, extravagant, you'd use a few other adjectives to describe him. he takes no prisoners. He runs his club the way he wants. And as you sometimes stereotype some of the Frenchmen, he is exactly like that. So who knows what his plans are for the Semi Radradra. But he's well managed. Let's hope that management team can sort out this legal issue at home before we go any further down the track. Because they are serious. They are serious charges. Let's not underplay them. Domestic violence charges, they are utmost in our mind when it comes to dealing with Semi Radradra. Let's work out what sort of sympathy we should direct towards him before we worry about the trivial matters of where he's going to play rugby league.
Now, they describe Toulon as being cashed up, that they got a bit of money, but are they a good club or are they not?
They're cashed up, courtesy Murad Bujalal. Yeah. You only need to look at some of the rogues that have flown from rugby and league to join Toulon to know that clearly they have enough money and don't necessarily look into someone's background before deciding whether or not to sign them. look, it's just part of the wonderful tapestry that is world sport, isn't it? When Toulon can fly in and pinch some of the rogues that... the colourful rogues, I'll put it that way, that have existed. So there you go. Rugby league, it's not being played at the moment. Someone, I think it was Glenn Lauder in the Fox Sports newsroom last night, said, oh, geez, thank goodness it's the off-season. Very much tongue-in-cheek.
Matt, switching codes now, and a code that you're very much involved in, the NBL. We saw a big upset last night, the Adelaide 36ers knocking off the table-topping Kings.
Andrew, it was a remarkable round, and Cosy, I know you'll be able to relate to this. We had five games over the weekend. In all five games, the lower-ranked team won. At one stage, the bottom four had beaten the top four, and last night completed it with second-last now, beating the team that's coming first. It's the closest NBL competition there's been to... started in 1979. Two losses separate, in fact, one loss separates first from last, which is a magnificent scenario for the administrators. They love it when it's that close. And last night, Adelaide did it again. They've beaten Brisbane in Brisbane. Now they've beaten Sydney in Sydney. And all of a sudden, the Kings don't look so invincible as they did earlier on in the season. Adding to their headaches, Steve Blake, this decorated NBA veteran, has to decided to head back to the States. It hasn't quite been working for him at the Kings. Hasn't found his niche. He's a bloke who's played nearly 1,000 NBA games. He owns NBA records. He came here amid a hail of publicity, but he just hasn't been able to find the right format at Sydney. They don't quite play what he's looking to do, and as a result, he's been limited to less than 6 points per game, a couple of assists per game. Not the numbers you'd expect given his NBA pedigree. So he's headed back. We hear... to deal with family matters, and let's see that what happens. It might actually be a good thing because Sydney played its best basketball without Steve Blake when you had Kevin Lish and Jason Kadee given more time and more rain. So it might actually work out to be a positive for the Kings.
The Kings kicked off well, didn't they? Isn't it amazing how the season's evened out a bit now?
There it is. It really is because we've had Melbourne started the year as title favourites. They crashed as Sydney emerged, and since then we've had Perth, we've had Brisbane all sticking their hands up, and over the weekend, Adelaide proved that they can be contenders, as did the Illawarra Hawks, even Cairns, who are 3-1 at home. So don't forget about us. It is impossible to pick a winner in the NBL at the moment, which might make it a little bit tough for punters, but at the same time, you get a decent price if you think that you can spot the winner, because on form, it's very hard to separate the teams.
Well, we've got the 36ers and the Taipans. They're the two rank outsiders in the championship market, Matt. They're both at $15. But from what you're saying, that's probably a little bit of value.
It is value because if those teams scrape into the finals, then absolutely anything can happen. There has been a period in the NBL, even early this season, where home court advantage was huge. We basically had a 70% skew towards home court teams. But over the last few rounds, that has gone out the window, as has their ladder positions. And apart from the fact that we've got a close competition, we've got some great action. There are three imports now in most teams. They've been able to pay up to four marquees, whereby only $150,000 of their salary appears on the cap. And basically, clubs aren't hindered by the salary cap. You can spend over the $1.1 million soft cap and pay a luxury tax at the end of the year. Now, there is a bit of a question mark whether that sort of model is sustainable, especially for the likes of Adelaide and Cairns and Illawarra that deal in smaller markets. But the administrators have said, rather than waiting for them to come and we will build it and get them to come, and as they come and generate more money, then we'll fund it that way. Larry Kesselman is a smart business operator out of Melbourne. He's decided that's the best way to go, and certainly the results are on the court. We've seen some fantastic basketball.
Matty, always good to catch up, mate. We look forward to seeing you on Fox Sports, and we'll talk to you next week.
I don't understand where I'm going to go this afternoon, boys. Is it Fiji? Is it France? I'll find somewhere to call home this afternoon anyway.
You will. Someone will have you, don't worry.
See you, gents.
See you, mate.
See you, Matt.
Matty Russell joining us there from Fox Sports. Always good to catch up with him. It is 19 past 10 at Sky Sports Radio. Cameron Davis is having a terrific run in the golf at the moment too, Andrew. And not long ago turned pro. and he joins us now. Morning, Cameron. How are you?
Hey, guys. How you going?
Very well, thank you. You've had a terrific run. You were to, you. Well, how long ago since you turned pro? It's only weeks, isn't it?
Yeah, it'll be close to a month now.
Yeah. Now, that's often a very difficult decision for amateurs to make. What brought that about?
Well, we kind of thought about it well in advance, about a year earlier. It was, I made a decision if I hadn't qualified for a major as an amateur or something for next year, I would make the turn after the Asia Pacific Amateur. Just, you know, I felt like the right time. I've been playing a decent standard of golf for a while, and you know, it was, you know, my stats were all telling me that I was playing good enough to compete as a pro. So yeah, just needed to get myself amongst it and see what it's like, really.
Cam, how hard is it to survive as an amateur financially?
I was very lucky. I had a lot of support from my state golf association, and also the Golf Australia national squad looked after me very well. I didn't have too much of an idea of how expensive everything was until I turned pro, really. But it is a big financial investment, really, to be an amateur golfer and travel around. So definitely very nice to have some people helping you out.
Yeah, Cam, you recently went around in the Queensland Open. You finished up at one over, but you weren't that far off the winner. Were you happy with your performance throughout that tournament?
Well, I found it very tough to, putting on the greens out there. I'm sure a lot of the guys probably agree with me. It was very tough to hole out, and the conditions of just the winds really made it quite a difficult golf course. I played there earlier in the year for the men's interstate series for the amateurs, and it was, you know, it played a lot easier for that tournament. So I was going in expecting something relatively low to win, but you know, the conditions for the week kind of made it a very tough week, and I didn't play that badly. I actually did pretty well the holes where I did, but it was just a tough week. The gusty winds always make it a bit tricky.
Cam, there was a tournament, I think, recently in Korea where you played that you described as a really good learning experience when you look back at how you played some of the holes.
Yeah, I was coming down the stretch. Obviously, a win at that tournament would have qualified me for the Masters, and I had a couple of shot lead coming down the stretch. And, yeah, there were just a couple of things that really, in hindsight, would have really helped me there, but definitely helped me in the future. Just, you know, the patience, the thing, really having a solid game plan to stick to. I was kind of getting caught up in the moment a little bit, wanting to hit my driver a little bit too hard and going for a couple of flags that I probably shouldn't have, especially down the stretch. So it was a really cool experience to play really well at a high level tournament, and obviously professional golf is going to be like that every week, if not, you know, more pressure on you. So, you know, a couple of things I learned from that week are definitely going to be very helpful going forward.
It must be an amazing learning curve when you're on that fourth day, and maybe the you're on the back nine, and all of a sudden you think, I'm a real chance at winning this. Composure and control would be something you'd really have to exercise.
Yes, well, the amount of times you'd be finding yourself in that situation as an amateur would be very hard to come across. So, I mean, no, it was awesome. I was actually lucky enough to have the same kind of opportunity the year before. So I dealt with the first half of the last round a lot better than I did. Well, a lot better than I would have otherwise. But it was just a golf course where you had to make some birdies. Everyone else was making a lot of them, and I pushed a little bit too hard probably.
Cam, you go around this week in the Australian PGA Championship. How's the preparation been like heading into the tournament?
It's been good. I've been working on the game for the last ever since the Australian Open. I've been back home doing a lot of work and working with my coach, and you know, things are shaping up pretty well. Just got in yesterday morning and had a look at the golf course, and it looks fantastic. It's a different kind of golf course than the ones we have back home. It's actually not that dissimilar to Royal Sydney for the Australian Open with the greens and the slopes. So, you know, I feel pretty comfortable. I've only had one look at it, and I'm going to go back out again today. But, you know, it looks like it's going to be a good challenge, especially if the wind gets up.
Who do you rate as probably one of the players to beat heading into the tournament?
We've got a couple of world-class players, well, a lot of world-class players this week. You know, it's pretty hard to go past Scotty, and, I mean, Danny Lee's out there, but you know, just to qualify for this event, your good golf's good enough to get yourself right at the top of the leaderboard, so I can't really single out any guys other than that as a good chance to win.
Ken, there'll be a lot of golfers listening at the moment to you talk and thinking, gee, I'd love to be him. He's going so well, and I'm just a bit of a hack. What's the most common thing you get asked by golfers to say, I'm ordinary at whatever and I need to improve it? What's the thing that you find most ordinary at?
I think it's probably chipping. Yeah. I'm doing a lot of practice in my chipping at the home club. They quite often come up to me and ask what I'm doing. Yeah, I think a lot of people just don't really utilise the bounce on the bottom of the wedge, and you know, just the concept of opening up the club face and not trying to hit down it so much as opposed to kind of sweeping it off the turf and using the bottom of the club to, you know, give you a bit more margin for error from hitting it fat. That would probably be the most common thing I'm asked.
I thought you might have said people, you know, trying to belt the cover off it and get too much, you know, too many yards out of it.
No, I don't tend to get that as much.
No, I don't mean you. I mean, amateurs. No, I don't even mean amateurs. I mean hacks like me. You try and hit it too far and finish up three fairways away, that's all.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a good point. I guess just swinging it smooth and making sure you hit it out of the middle of the club face is all you need to do. It tends to be the softer you swing it, the further it goes anyway. So, yeah, nice smooth swing and, you know, good contact is probably the best combination for a long drive.
Cam, do you play left-handed or right-handed? Because I jumped onto YouTube this morning, and I see that you can hit it from both sides, you know, quite well.
Oh, well, I'm a right-handed golfer. I did have a left-handed club in my bag when I was a lot younger. A little bit of practice on the range, I can start to get them going left-handed.
You're good at both hands, are you?
No, it takes a lot of time to start hitting the ball out of the club face left-handed. I definitely couldn't play around the golf left-handed, but standing on the range and give me an hour, I can start to get them up in the air.
Now, do you do trick shots as well?
No, I'm not much of a trick shot man, no.
No, just really out there for the golf and then you enjoy it. Who's been the biggest inspiration for you, Cameron? You look at the golfers, we've had some wonderful golfers in Australia, but also worldwide. Who's the one you looked at and thought, that's who I want to be like?
I mean, Tiger Woods was definitely the man when I was growing up. He was going through his hot streak and, you know, everyone's kind of growing up looking at him going, if I'm going to be the best, I've got to be like this guy. So that was probably it. But, you know, over the last couple of years, seeing guys like Jason Day and Adam Scott's been awesome. And, you know, being able to see Scotty play a couple of times and just, you know, see him always come back for Aussie Opens and, you know, letting everyone see how world number one can hit the ball is pretty cool. And, yeah, to be able to play in the same field as him this week and try and give him a run for his money, that would be it's going to be cool.
Terrific. Mate, good to catch up, as always, and we'll talk to you soon. Good luck, too.
Thanks, mate. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Cameron Davis joining us there, and good to see him going so well with his goal. Andrew, it's 27 past 10, Sky Sports Radio, and Andrew Gibbons riding today at Tamworth. He's up there. How are you, Gibbo?
Very good, Sean. Yourself?
Good, thank you, mate. You've got you're on the red-hot favourite in the first there, our girl Charlie from the Crystal East camp, and just ran a nice race in the English Challenge at Scone last prep.
Yeah, I rode her a first start before that, and did a little bit wrong there at Taree, but still ran a very good race, and then, yeah, Chris threw in the deep end in the good race at Scone, and wasn't disgraced at all, didn't get beat far, and give her a little bit of rest after that, come back, her trials have been good, and looks to have found a reasonably soft race for her to kick off in years. You go through the first starters and there's sort of not many there to say that their race forms to worry about, and which brings you to the first starters and the first starters, the horse of Mellow Gorman's our child, and although it's a nice horse, I think it'll probably want further, and apart from that, there's only one other first starter in for a waltz. I've seen it trial and geez, I'm having pain up for it. I'd hate to be the owner of that one.
You mungrel. I'm in that give, are you? Yeah, right.
Oh, the next Cosgrove, is it you, is it?
Yes.
It looks like, we found a good race to kick off in here. She's got natural speed. She put herself up where you need to be, especially with the rail out there. And Yeah, I think he's
going
the right race for a start,
Rocket. Good on you, mate. We'll be battling each other today, mate.
For sure.
All right. Sophia,
I hope you're on a good second.
Yeah, good on you. If that happens, you'll never be on again, all right? The third, Sophia, and you're right, this one, Leo Gorman as well, had a trial and came back and had a run the other day at Scone.
Yeah, form before that was a little worrying, sort of beating a fair distance in one of them runs, but obviously trained at a different stable then, and Mel's got a second up over a mile, being out of her Seville mare. That's probably beneficial, getting up to the right trip. Trying a bit awkward, but never having to do with the horse, I can only sort of go by what I've seen in the replay, so I'll be guided by what Mel tells me today, so just hoping that Seville breeding through down there somewhere that'll milk too long.
Pierce has got to be a fair chance in the fifth. Its form hasn't been too bad.
Yeah, another one that two starts back was super impressive for Kenny Barabran, and probably last start may have been looking for the mile then, so that's what it gets today. Home track mile. Suva very rarely has her horses not prepared right, so I'm looking forward to ride this horse actually. So I was pretty impressed with that win, two starts back, and yeah, gets his chance today in the right sort of race.
All right, and Fireman Sam, I am. You're on board this, and this horse, he'll be racing around Beaumont and Randwick, probably in better class, comes back a bit today.
Yeah, horse that went for a couple together early on, but it's been a fair way out of form for its next couple of preps. It showed signs the other day that it could be getting back to that old form. It didn't go too far, and what I thought was a very hot race at Beaumont track. Those first two horses in that race, I think, are genuine city class horses. Weighted pretty badly today, though, 62. Makes it a bit tougher, but speaking to Justin, he was pretty confident the horse will run well. It's just that anything probably playing against us today, we're going to have to ride it a little bit conservative to make sure we get the line, and just with that rail so far out, it may be a hard day to make up ground, but hopefully getting on through the day, we can make up ground and we'll figure in the money somewhere.
All right, mate. So your best today, what, our girl Charlie in the first?
Yep. My main goal is to be your horse, that's it.
Good on you, mate. Good on you, Gibbo. Good luck.
Thanks,
Todd. Andrew Gibbons there, and he's got four nice tries today there, Andrew, at Tamworth.
Yeah, well, our girl Charlie, easily the best supported out of those horses there, Cozzy. Currently 215, and the punters are taking that price, and it's about five times as popular as anything else in the race. While your horse is a $9 chance. Any lead in there for the listeners, Cozzy?
Well, fingers crossed. Just hope she's having a first start, so you never know what to expect first start. So go Molly and Benno. There we go. So, yeah, we'll just hope she runs a nice race.
Give it strength, Cozzy. It's always exciting when you have a, you know, whether it be a harness horse, a galloper, or a greyhound having its first start. You never know where this journey can take you.
I'll be walking the box before the race, don't worry. All right, mate. Good on you, Andrew. We'll talk to you through the day.
No worries, Cozzy. And remiss of us not to mention Cam Davis, a $67 chance to win that Australian PGA this weekend.
Terrific. 28 to 11, Sky Sports Radio. Let's update news.